Welcome back to Condor Currents, the podcast that flows through the latest in computer architecture research and RISC-V innovation. I'm Ty Garibay, president of Condor Computing, and we've got a great episode lined up for you today. This episode is brought to you by Condor Computing, high-performance RISC-V processor IP from Andes Technology, the world's leading RISC-V processor IP provider with 30% market share and over 12 billion SoCs shipped. Learn more at condorcomputing.com. Today, we're diving into some really fascinating research. We've got a paper on a clever new architecture for serving thousands of AI adapters simultaneously, and another one tackling memory bottlenecks in quantum control systems. Plus, we've got some exciting news out of the RISC-V world, specifically around SpaceMate's new K3 chip and its early benchmark results. There's a lot to unpack, so let's get into it. All right, our first paper today comes from Archive, and the title is PLLOR, an NDP-enhanced pooled memory system for cost-efficient multi-LoRa serving. The authors are Zhang Kaiyu, Om Rishab Venkatashalam, Zheng Wang, and colleagues. This one is right in the intersection of AI infrastructure and computer architecture, and I think it surfaces some really important design challenges. So let me set the stage here. If you've been following the AI landscape at all, you've probably heard of LoRA, low-rank adaptation. It's a technique where you take a large base model, say a big language model, and instead of fine-tuning all its billions of parameters, you train a small set of lightweight adapter weights on top of it. Those adapters are comparatively tiny, maybe a few megabytes versus gigabytes for the full model, but they let you specialize the model for a specific task, a specific user, or a specific agent workflow. Now, here's where it gets architecturally interesting. In production deployments, you're not running one LoRA adapter. You might be running hundreds or even thousands of them simultaneously. Think about a platform where every enterprise customer has their own fine-tuned variant of the same base model. You've got one giant model sitting in GPU memory, and on top of it, you're swapping in and out adapters depending on which request just came in. And the paper talks about deployments holding over 1,000 adapters. That's a wild scale. So what's the problem? Well, GPUs are designed around the assumption that compute is the bottleneck. They give you massive TFLOPs, teraflops of floating point throughput, but relatively modest memory capacity. A high-end GPU might have 80 gigabytes of HBM. That sounds like a lot until you're trying to stage 1,000 adapters alongside a 100 billion parameter base model. You run out of room fast, and the way most existing systems handle this is by keeping adapters in CPU DRAM and streaming them over PCIe when needed. PCIe is the interconnect that connects your GPU to your host CPU in a typical server. Now, PCIe has decent bandwidth on paper, but every time you need to pull an adapter across, you're paying a tax, a kernel invocation on the CPU side, a memory copy operation. Latency that adds up when you're trying to serve requests at low latency. It's like having your tools in a workshop across the street. Sure, you can go get them, but it slows everything down. And there's another capacity ceiling. You're bounded by the DIMM slots on your motherboard.
You can only put so much DRAM in a server chassis, so the existing approach hits both a latency wall and a capacity wall. Enter PLLORA. The key insight here is to use what's called near data processing NDP, combined with a pooled memory architecture. Let's break both of those down because they're both important architectural concepts. Near data processing, or NDP, is the idea of moving computation closer to where the data lives rather than moving the data to where the compute lives. This is a concept that computer architects have been excited about for decades, and it's becoming increasingly relevant as memory bandwidth becomes a bigger bottleneck than raw compute. At Condor Computing, we think a lot about how memory access patterns interact with processor design. So this stuff is very much in our wheelhouse. The pooled memory side of PLLORA refers to leveraging CXL, Compute Express Link-based memory expansion. CXL is an emerging interconnect standard that allows you to attach disaggregated memory to servers with much better latency characteristics than traditional PCIe storage or remote DRAM over a network.
Think of it as a high-speed, cache-coherent memory highway that lets you pool memory across a system far more flexibly than DMM slots allow. So what PLLORA does is place lightweight processing elements, those NDP units, directly within the CXL memory devices. Instead of shipping adapter data from memory to the GPU and having the GPU run the LoRA computations, you push the computation into the memory device itself and only send back the result. You're compressing what crosses the expensive data path. This is a really elegant architectural mapping. LoRA computations are actually relatively lightweight. They're low-rank matrix multiplications, which is exactly the kind of operation you can implement efficiently in a simple power-constrained NDP processor. You don't need the full fire hose of GPU compute for this. A modest but well-placed processor right next to the data is architecturally a much better fit.
And by using CXL pooled memory, you're also blowing past the DMM capacity ceiling. You can attach terabytes of memory in a disaggregated fashion, which means you can actually hold all those thousands of LoRa adapters resident and ready to go. No staging required.
Why does this matter for computer architects? I think PLoRa is a great case study in matching your architecture to your workload's actual computational profile. The workload here is memory bound, not compute bound. The adapters are small but numerous. Access patterns are irregular. And the bottleneck is data movement. When you properly characterize a workload like that, the architectural answer isn't throw more GPU at it, it's stop moving data unnecessarily and process it where it lives. That's NDP in a nutshell. It also speaks to the growing relevance of heterogeneous architectures. Future servers won't just be CPUs and GPUs. They'll have specialized processing elements embedded in memory and network cards. In storage, a whole ecosystem of compute nodes, each tuned for a specific piece of the workload. That's exciting territory, and it's very much where RISC-V shines because RISC-V's modularity and extensibility make it an ideal ISA for building those lightweight, specialized NDP processors. Check the show notes for links to the full paper.
All right, let's move on to our second paper. And this one is a bit of a different domain, but architecturally just as fascinating. The title is Breaking Memory Bottlenecks in Quantum Control Systems for More Precise Experiments and Higher Throughput Computing. The authors are Yi-Ching Guang, Neil Vora, Yilun Su, and colleagues. Now I know what some of you might be thinking. Quantum computing, is that really computer architecture? And I'd say absolutely yes, at least this particular work is, because it's fundamentally about memory hierarchy design. Quantum computing needs classical control systems to function, and those control systems have a very interesting set of constraints that make them a compelling architecture problem. Let me give you the context. A quantum computer doesn't just run on its own. Every qubit operation, every gate, every measurement is orchestrated by a classical control system. This control system has to generate precisely timed microwave pulses, respond to measurement outcomes in real time, and execute complex conditional logic, all with extremely tight latency requirements. We're talking nanosecond scale timing, precision in many cases.
If your control signal arrives even slightly late, you've corrupted your quantum computation. The classical control hardware for this job is typically implemented on FPGAs, field programmable gate arrays. FPGAs are great for this because they give you deterministic cycle accurate timing. And FPGAs have two main types of memory on chip, BRAM, which is block RAM fast, deterministic low latency on chip memory, and the ability to reach out to external DRAM for larger storage. Here's the memory bottleneck as quantum systems scale up more qubits, more complex circuits, more experiments. The amount of pulse data and circuit data you need to store grows rapidly. On chip, RAM is limited. It's a finite resource on any FPGA die. So you might think, okay, just spill over to DRAM when you need more storage. But here's the killer problem. DRAM has non-deterministic latency, refresh cycles, row activations, bank conflicts. DRAM access time is variable. And that variability is absolutely toxic for a quantum control system that needs nanosecond timing precision. Missing a timing window in quantum control is like a surgeon's hand slipping. Small error, big consequences.
So the researchers built a system called AntQ. And the key contribution is a carefully designed memory hierarchy that bridges the gap between BRAM speed and DRAM's capacity. The name AntQ is kind of charming. Ants are small but highly organized and efficient, which is a good metaphor for what they're doing here. The core idea in AntQ is essentially a prefetching and staging architecture. You use the DRAM for bulk storage of quantum circuit data, but you prefetch upcoming sequences into BRAM well in advance of when they're needed. So that by the time the control system actually reaches out for that data, it's already sitting in fast, deterministic BRAM. And there's no latency surprise. This hides the non-deterministic latency of DRAM behind a deterministic buffer. If this sounds familiar to you as a computer architect, it should, because it's conceptually very similar to how caches work in a CPU. Your L1 cache is your fast, small on-chip storage. Your main memory is slow and large. The art is in predicting what you'll need and pulling it into the fast tier before you need it.
And Q is applying classic cache hierarchy thinking to the quantum control problem, which is a really satisfying intellectual connection. But there's a wrinkle that makes the quantum case harder than the general CPU case. You can't tolerate cache misses. In a CPU, a cache miss means a performance penalty. Your pipeline stalls for a few cycles. Life goes on. In a quantum control system, a miss means your pulse didn't fire on time, which means your qubit state is wrong, which means your computation is corrupted. So the system has to be much more conservative and predictable in how it manages that hierarchy. The paper describes scheduling and buffering strategies that provide strong guarantees about data availability.
The results are impressive. They demonstrate the ability to support significantly more complex circuits and higher throughput experimental runs, which directly translates to the ability to run more meaningful quantum algorithms and explore larger problem spaces. From a computer architecture standpoint, I find this paper compelling because it illustrates a recurring theme. Memory hierarchy design is never one size fits all.
Every application domain has a unique performance profile, a unique set of latency and bandwidth constraints, a unique cost for a miss versus a hit. Whether you're designing a RISC-V application processor, an NDP unit, or a quantum control system, the fundamental questions are the same. Where does your data live? How fast do you need it? And what does it cost when you don't have it ready? Quantum control just makes those stakes viscerally clear. Check the show notes for the full paper. Okay, let's shift gears to the news segment, and we've got some really exciting RISC-V hardware news today. SpaceSemit has been making waves, and this week we've got two pieces of coverage on their new K3 SoC, one from CNX Software and another from Foronix. I'm going to cover these together because they're really two perspectives on the same story, and taken together, they paint a pretty interesting picture. So first, who is SpaceSemit? They're a Chinese fabless semiconductor company that's been building RISC-V application processors. Their previous chip, the K1, made a splash as one of the first RISC-V chips capable of running a desktop Linux environment with reasonable performance.
It showed up in various single-board computer products and got a fair bit of community attention. The K3 is their next step, and it's a significant one. The K3 is described as a 16-core RISC-V SoC, and it's implementing the RVA23 profile. Let's talk about that for a second because it matters. RVA23 is a RISC-V application processor profile. It's a standardized set of extensions that an application class RISC-V processor must implement to be considered RVA23 compliant. This includes things like the V extension for vector processing, hypervisor support, and a bunch of other extensions that together define a baseline for running modern software stacks. RVA23 compliance is a big deal because it means software built for the RVA23 target will run on any compliant chip without special modifications. It's the RISC-V ecosystem building the kind of application binary interface stability that software developers need. 16 cores is also a notable jump. When you're talking about application class RISC-V processors, getting to 16 cores puts you in territory where you can seriously talk about workstation or light server workloads.
This isn't just a microcontroller or an embedded chip. This is a chip that wants to compete in general purpose computing. The Foronix coverage includes early benchmark numbers run on the K3 Pico ITX platform, which is a small form factor board designed around the K3. Now, early benchmarks are always worth treating with some calibration. These are pre-production or very early production systems. Software stacks may not be fully optimized. Compiler tuning may be preliminary. But even preliminary numbers are informative because they give you a sense of where the performance envelope sits. From what the benchmarks show, the K3 is making meaningful strides over previous generation RISC-V silicon. The vector extension implementation is getting exercised in workloads that benefit from SIMD-style computation, and the multi-core scaling looks reasonable. Are these numbers competitive with the leading ARM application processors or x86 at similar process nodes? Not quite yet, but that's not necessarily the right comparison. The right question is whether the RISC-V ecosystem is progressing, and on that front, the K3 is a clear yes.
What's particularly exciting from an ecosystem perspective is that SpaceSemit getting a 16-core RVA23 chip to market validates the profile itself. Every chip that implements RVA23 makes the software ecosystem more valuable because the pool of hardware that can run that software grows. This is the network effect that the RISC-V Foundation has been working to cultivate standardized profiles that let software target a real growing hardware base. At Condor Computing and through Andes Technologies RISC-V IP portfolio, we're deeply invested in this ecosystem maturation. When chips like the K3 ship and run real workloads and publish real benchmark numbers, it moves the whole conversation forward. It gives developers confidence, it gives system integrators options, and it pushes everyone to keep raising the bar. This is exactly the kind of progress that makes RISC. Five exciting right now. I also want to briefly flag the form factor here. A Pico ITX board is tiny, roughly 100 by 72 millimeters. Packing 16 RISC-V cores with RVA23 support into that form factor speaks to the efficiency of the design.
This is the kind of thing that opens up edge computing and compact embedded server applications. Check the show notes for links to both the CNX Software and Foronix coverage. The benchmark breakdowns are worth reading in detail. And lastly, we have a Nature.com paper in our newsfeed today, Performance-Aware Shared Memory Hierarchy Model for Multicore Processors. This one straddles the line between academic research and architectural engineering, and it's worth a moment of attention. The core of this work is about building models that predict and optimize shared memory hierarchy performance in multicore systems. This is a classic and enduring problem. When you go from a single core to many cores, the memory system gets complicated fast. All those cores are fighting for shared cache capacity, shared memory bandwidth, and coherency traffic on top of it all. Think of it like a highway system. One car on a highway is easy, you just drive, but add 1,000 cars and suddenly you need traffic models on ramps, interchanges, and traffic lights. The memory hierarchy in a multicore chip is that highway system, and the paper is essentially proposing a better traffic model.
The performance-aware framing is key here. What this means is that the model doesn't just describe the hardware, it actively informs how software and the system runtime can make better decisions about memory placement, prefetching, and scheduling to avoid the worst-case contention scenarios. If you can predict that a given workload mix is going to thrash a shared L3 cache, you can either schedule those workloads differently or provision cache partitioning to isolate them. Cache partitioning is something that modern high-performance processors support to varying degrees. Intel has cache allocation technology. ARM has cache partitioning mechanisms in some server designs. RISC-V does